Hey everyone, it's Mark Ferguson with Invest for More, and welcome to the first ever Insider Podcast. Now, first of all, welcome to everybody who signed up and has joined. Great to have you here. I used to do a podcast every week. So some of you who have been following me for a while will remember that podcast. I think we did 150 episodes, and it got to the point where it was just too much time finding guests, recording, getting things edited, writing up the notes, and I was kind of going crazy in my life. So that was one of the things I eliminated, was the podcast, just to have more focus on my business, family, and myself. However, a lot of you have come back asking for me to start the podcast again. I still get requests from guests to be on my podcast, even though it's been about 2 years, year and a half since I stopped doing it. So for our insider program here that we just started, we've decided to bring back a monthly podcast where I discuss my business, certain techniques, advice, all kinds of great stuff. So I hope you guys enjoy it. I hope you find it useful. And we're going to get into some in-depth information on my story for this first podcast, flips, commercial real estate, what I'm focusing on, and try and provide some real value right off the bat. But before we get into that, I'm going to talk about this insider club that we just started and let you know what it's all about, why I started it, and hopefully how it can help you in your investing. So first off, I have had a ton of people reach out to me, which is fantastic. I started my blog back in 2013, and it was really cool seeing people email me and say that what I had written had helped them. And that really motivated me to keep writing. I started YouTube, social media, written books, all kinds of crazy stuff. And along the way, I've become pretty popular among the real estate investing world, and I have a lot of people who want my help. I think we have 60-some thousand followers on Instagram, 70,000 on Facebook. We've got almost 60,000 YouTube followers, and I get a lot of questions, and it's gotten to the point where it's just tough for me to answer all those questions because it is taking away time from my family, from my business, and just from the things I like to do, and it's getting a little bit, not frustrating, but just consuming. So I feel like I'm letting things slip behind the cracks. It's not going as well as it should. So I started this club, first of all, to help those people who have questions. So if you have questions about anything, real estate, rentals, commercial properties, real estate agents, writing books, Instagram, whatever it is, I created this program. We do an Ask Me Anything every month where I take questions, I answer them. All of those are saved. And you can go back, look through all the questions, see my answers, and hopefully I can help everybody through that process. So that's why I started this, so I could focus on certain questions, then everybody can see those questions, and it's not answering a bunch of the same questions over and over again. So that's one of the main reasons I started this. Second, we have a ton of cool calculators that we've been working on over the years that we never really did much with. So we have some pretty advanced calculators that we include with this monthly subscription. So kind of an advanced rental property calculator that allows you to enter the price, the loan information, the rent, the expenses, the taxes, all kinds of stuff. And it spits out the returns, the ROI, your cash flow. And you can even pick now from 30 years later to see how that property will be doing and what your return will be. And we even increase rents and value with inflation, or you can enter a different amount if you want. We even include a BRRRR calculator with that if you plan to buy it, refinance it, all kinds of great stuff. We also have a flip or rental renovation calculator that'll help you decide or figure out what the cost might be to renovate properties. Now, there's a lot of leeway on that depending on where you are, who you hire, but it can give you a basic idea on that. So that's something else we've had for a long time and just never used. So this motivated me to get those kind of finished up and ready to go for use. So we have those. We'll have a monthly newsletter as well as this podcast. So want to have, you know, books I recommend in that newsletter, any new videos we put out on YouTube, any new articles we have, any interesting news that comes out. So just a monthly newsletter as well for the insider members. We'll have discounts on my coaching products. So if you're a monthly insider, you automatically get a bigger discount off of anything else that's going on, any sales, anything like that. And then we're going to have some new features coming along as well. So we don't have this set up yet, but we're working on it, where we're going to post monthly stats. So like monthly housing stats, you know, housing starts, or the Case-Shiller price index. We might even do like the stock market price, gold, all kinds of interesting stats that we'll post monthly. And then we'll kind of have a history of every month of what that's doing. So you can go back and see, you know, what the trends look like. So that'll be really exciting. Hopefully we'll get that up and running here in the next month or two. And we'll just keep adding to this program as we go to make it better and better. So if any of you have suggestions, ideas, things we can add to it, let me know. You can email me, mark@investformore.com. As I said, if you're asking me a bunch of different questions, it's going to be tough for me to respond to you. But if you have suggestions or things that can make this better, then we can try and implement those and add those as we go. All right, so that's kind of what the Insider Club looks like right now. Trying to just give you more access to direct questions from me, other cool stuff, and this podcast, which I hope adds value to your life and investing and all that good stuff too. All right, now let's move on to my story. So I know a lot of you know this. I've done a lot of podcasts, but I'm going to give you an intro on who I am just in case you're new to this, never heard of me before. I grew up in Greeley, Colorado. My dad was a real estate agent since the time I was born, so I grew up with real estate. I slept under his desk in the office when I was very young, and he did very well as an agent, worked a lot, and as I got older and older, got into high school, for whatever reason, just rebellion or wanted to do my own path, I wanted nothing to do with real estate. So I actually went to the University of Colorado to do civil engineering. And my first year at the University of Colorado, I realized I did not want to do civil engineering, mostly because I'm really good at basic math, but really advanced math is really hard. And I just was not focused enough. I did not have the mindset at that time to get through Calc 3 and Physics 2 and those classes. And then I just thought to myself, I don't want to do this for the rest of my life, doing extremely complicated math. So I switched to business. I transferred to the business school with an emphasis in finance. The very interesting thing I found when I went into the finance school was I had to redo the math mod. So while I had just taken Calc 2, I had to go back and do algebra. So I did pretty well in those classes for some reason. But it was interesting having to retake all this math. But I did learn quite a bit in college. My favorite class by far was an entrepreneurial class where they had us run an imaginary company and we had teams and I kind of took over my team and we would have beat everybody in that class by a long margin, except a bunch of the other teams figured out if they sold their entire company and all their inventory, all of a sudden their stock value went up by 20 times, which made no sense. I tried to explain that to my teacher, but she didn't understand it. But anyway, still one of my favorite classes. So I graduated from CU in 4 years, took some summer school to get everything done on time, and started looking for a job. So I had a finance degree. I thought banking, you know, something like that would be interesting, and just kind of started looking for work. To be honest, I wasn't looking extremely hard. I did a couple, you know, interviews, not much, and was not finding anything that was appealing to me. You know, like go be a bank teller for 5 years and maybe you'll move up. That wasn't something I wanted to do. So I went back home and started working part-time for my dad. So to start with, I was doing manual labor, landscaping work, taking care of some of their properties, painting, things like that. I moved into an apartment. My sister is also in real estate, has rentals, and was a property manager for many years. And she managed a 10-story apartment building in Greeley. And I was the on-site manager there. So I lived there for a year and a half, helped manage things, got a reduction in rent. I thought I should get free rent, but my sister didn't. Took care of the pool. So yes, I was the pool boy for a while. Had to, you know, check the chemicals and everything every day, make sure those were good. The most interesting part was when a homeless person was in the pool room and I opened it up and he was standing there looking at me. That was interesting, but he was nice and we parted ways nicely. So was staying there for a while. During that time, I got my real estate license. So I've been doing real estate helping my dad, and I saw the flexibility of the schedule. I saw other agents. I saw a lot of them making good money, a lot of them making nothing. And then I saw my friends from college who had kind of gone into the corporate world and seemed pretty miserable. So they're working all the time, not making a whole lot of money. I know they're just starting out, but to me at that point, I'm like, man, real estate sure looks better. So I got started as an agent, got my license, and along the way, my dad would flip houses once in a while. So he'd flip a few houses a year, and I'd help him do that. I started helping him, work on deals. I did some of the manual labor on those houses, painting, installing light fixtures, making $10 an hour, I think, at that time. And I earned a very, very small percentage of the profit on each flip. And I got my license, as I said, and started selling houses. To be honest, the first 3 to 4 years, I didn't do that great. I did okay. I survived. I can't complain. I made enough money to buy my first house right after moving out of the Oasis Tower where I was living. And but at that time, this was 2002, 2003, just about anybody could buy a house. So it wasn't a difficult process. I went to the banker. They're like, hey, how much money do you make? I told him, like, okay, great. We can get you a loan. So that was pretty easy. We found out why it was so easy later on when the housing market crashed. But I bought my first house, helped my dad flip houses once in a while, and was selling a few houses here and there. So nothing, you know, I wasn't like this super motivated, crazy entrepreneur just going crazy in my early 20s. I was kind of relaxed, go with the flow. Hey, let's just work a little bit here and there, hang out with my friends type of thing. So I got a little frustrated with that life. A few years later, as I said, I was really working more on the flips, helping my dad find more deals, doing more with the repair process. You know, when I first was doing them, he was doing white walls, cheap carpet, you know, basic remodels, and it worked, but I knew there was a lot more we could do. I also was a lot more aggressive on what properties I wanted to buy, which could be good or bad, depending on how you look at it. So come around 2005, 2006, I was getting frustrated. I'm like, I'm selling, you know, 10 to 20 houses a year. I'm doing okay there. We're doing these flips. I'm making a small percentage here, you know, but I just wasn't getting ahead. I never had any savings. You know, some months I'd have $10,000 or $20,000 in the bank. The next month I'd have $10,000 or $20,000 in credit card debt. You know, it wasn't a steady work, and I wasn't really focused on it either. So I kind of wrote a letter to my dad explaining why I should make more money, why he should pay me more, and how crazy it was about how many houses I'd have to sell to make enough money that I wanted to make. And my dad looked at the letter and said, that's nice, and kind of gave it back to me and didn't do anything. I'm like, that's not cool. But what I actually did when I wrote that letter out, I kind of accidentally set some goals. So I put in there, you know, I'd have to sell 100 houses a year to make as much money as I think I should be making right now. And I was kind of saying that in the letter is like, how, look how crazy and ridiculous this is. But really what I almost did is said, hey, why don't you just sell 100 houses a year and you can make the money you want to make? And so I don't know if it was just randomness or fate or whatever you want to call it. But shortly thereafter, a company had faxed me asking me to do a broker price opinion. So I didn't know what a broker price opinion was. I'm like, hey, what is this? It's basically a report you do for a bank to value a property. It's like an appraisal, but not quite like an appraisal. They'd pay me $50, and that was it. I'm like, hey, this is cool. So I did the BPO, turned it in, made $50. I'm like, hey, that was easy, and I didn't have to talk to anybody, didn't have to call anybody, didn't have to go show houses. I'm like, hey, this is pretty sweet. So that got in the idea of BPO scenarios in my head. I started researching what BPOs were, how they worked, and basically they helped banks learn how to value houses, so they could sell foreclosures. Because we're coming into the foreclosure market in Colorado about that time. We kind of beat everybody to the punch. And there are more and more foreclosures happening. So I researched how they worked, what happened, all that good stuff. Now, while this was going on, I decided to make the biggest mistake of my life. I've talked about this before on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, all that good stuff. We had a flip. In my infinite wisdom of making big changes, I decided to kind of buy a flip of my own. My dad helped me finance it, but I would do all the work myself. So, bought this flip. It was an older house. Looking back on it now, I think I bought it for like 120, it was going to be worth like 180 when we were done. There wasn't that much room in it. I don't know why I thought this was a good investment. And I went in there and replaced windows, replaced doors, tore out walls, put in a brand new kitchen, painted everything, put in fixtures. Basically, I did everything except electrical work and plumbing work. And I was miserable for not 6 months. I'm exaggerating. It's like 3 or 4 months. I always tell myself it's 6 months, but when I look back at the dates, I'm like, oh, wait, it wasn't that long. So, but while I was doing this, I kind of put on hold the whole REO BPO thing. I was like, hey, this is exciting, but I wasn't really working on it. And as well as not working on the REO BPO thing, I was not selling any houses as an agent. Nothing, because I was spending every day at this house. Somehow, I had gotten it in my head that I could finish this house in like a month, kind of working part-time at it, even though it would take a contractor with a crew more than a month to fix it up. You know, I wasn't being realistic at all. And that's some advice for you guys out there too. When you're fixing up houses on your own, it takes a lot of time and a lot of work. And if you're not a contractor, you don't know what you're doing, it takes you three times as long as those guys. So if it takes those guys a month to fix up a property, it's going to take you a lot longer working full time. So remember that. So eventually I got through this deal. We got the house on the market. The housing market was starting to take a tumble, and I sold it for way less than I thought. It took longer to sell, and I lost money on that deal. It was not fun wasting 3 or 4 months of my life and not making any money. That whole time, we weren't finding new flips to buy because I was spending all my time on this house, and it was not a good experience. And people ask me all the time, well, yeah, but you learned so much. That was like your tuition for, you know, getting into the business. And I'm like, no, not really, because I already knew how to flip houses. We already knew how to hire contractors. We already knew how to have other people do the work. Yes, it did help me a little bit in that I knew how to install windows now and do some stuff. But honestly, I could have learned all that stuff from watching our contractors do it, from watching YouTube, from reading, from looking online. I didn't have to do it myself. But it was an interesting story to tell, and I'm telling it right now. And it was a learning experience in that I learned how valuable my time was. So a lot of people will fix up their houses and say, man, I saved like $10,000 in labor by doing this all myself. Yeah, you did save a lot of money in labor, but you wasted so much time. Not wasted, but used so much of your own time, and you're not accounting for how much your time is worth. If your time's worth $20 an hour or $30 an hour doing other stuff, how much money did you actually save? Sometimes you lose money by doing the work yourself. So I really learned my time was better spent doing other things, high-level things. And not to mention, doing manual labor, doing construction takes a toll on your body. You know, not to be a complainer, but you see some of these contractors, some of these guys who have been working for decades, and they are in rough shape. You know, I know quite a few people who quit the business just because physically their body could not take it anymore. All the bending over, your knees, your back, your hands. It is rough to be doing manual labor, working on houses nonstop all the time. So after we sold that house, got through it, then I'm like, okay, I got to focus on something else. I'm never doing that again. And that's when I kind of got like, okay, this REO thing, maybe there's something to it. There's more foreclosures. Let's dive into it. And I didn't know where to start. You know, YouTube wasn't really going at that time. There weren't many, you know, blogs weren't really a big thing at that time. It's all kind of getting started. And I wasn't online hardly at all, like researching stuff. I was just like, well, I know there's foreclosures. I know the public trustee sells those foreclosures. I know they list who the banks are. So I started looking at the public trustee list, saw who the banks were, and I cold called banks. That's what I did. I called the bank, said, hey, how do I list your properties? How do I become the person who's selling these for you? And a lot of the banks I couldn't get through to. I had no idea who I was trying to talk to. Got nowhere. But a few banks said, hey, you need to talk to our REO department. And honestly, I didn't even know what REO meant at that time. It means real estate owned, and it's what a lot of banks call their foreclosures. And so I talked to the REO departments, and some of them are like, hey, we don't sell them directly. We use asset managers. We use these third-party companies. You need to sign up with them. So I did. I signed up with, US Res at the time. I signed up for Ocwen at the time. Many of you may remember them, one of the worst companies ever in the history of the world. They are now Hubzu. Signed up for some ResNet. Signed up for, what was it, Ario Trans, they call it now. It's I don't even remember what all these names were. And so I signed up for all these places. Some of them I had to pay fees. And I started getting BPOs. I started getting more BPOs. And I started completing them. Some of them I did for free, hoping I got a listing at some point. Some of them I got paid for. And about 6 months after I started doing all this, I got my first listing. And I think it was from US Res. Yes, it was. And I remember getting that email, and it's like, new assignment with an address. And I saw it, and I'm like, is that what I think it is? And I opened it, and I was kind of like, you know, I didn't want to open it because I didn't want to be disappointed, so I waited a while. Then I finally opened it, and it's like, congratulations, you have a new property assigned to you. I was like, whoa, I just got an REO listing. It was so cool. I had no idea what to do. So I had to do an inspection in 24 hours. So I drove there, did my inspection, looked at the house, had to get it rekeyed. So I had a locksmith go rekey it, said I needed to do initial yard work. So I didn't know what I was doing. So I grabbed my lawnmower, put it in the back of my parents' truck, drove over there, mowed the lawn myself, bagged up a bunch of stuff. And then I realized, oh, I get paid to do some of this. So I actually got, I should not have ever done this. It's against the rules for me to actually do the work myself, but I didn't know that at the time. So submitted some invoices for my company to do this stuff, and was on my way to being an REO broker. So I sold that first house, got a couple more that year. Then another company gave me a listing. The next year we did like 10 listings, I think, and it was perfect for my personality. I am an introvert. Yes, I do YouTube. Yes, I do podcasts. I write. But I've always been that kid who hid behind his parents' leg and would not say a word. So I had to kind of get myself out of my shell. And calling those banks was one of the hardest things I ever did, just cold calling them. But I made myself do it. So I kept getting these listings, and they're perfect for me because it's all through email. I didn't have to talk to anybody on the phone. I didn't have to show houses to anybody. It was perfect. It was all about systems. I had to do BPOs, had to do reports, had to submit tasks online. It was great. And so with those few listings, then I became like just gung-ho. I was applying to every company I could find. The foreclosures were picking up, and sold like 30 houses the next year. And while this we were doing a flip or two here and there, but not much because I was totally focused on being an agent. Then I got a call from HUD. So HUD was kind of like the big daddy in the REO business, and everybody wanted to be in with HUD. But there was a catch with HUD in that they paid very tiny commissions. Agents had to cover like entire states sometimes. It was kind of crazy how they did business. However, right around this time, HUD completely changed how they sold houses. They were using more agents. They're paying 3% to listing broker. They didn't have to do the whole state. They actually wanted smaller territories so that the agent could do a better job. And now HUD was looking very appealing to many REO agents. So I'd actually applied to the companies who were in Colorado. I think there were three companies doing HUD homes at that time. No response. Nothing was happening. And then I got a call from Home Telos. And it's Darren Saransky. Darren's a great guy. I wonder what he's doing now. I met him in Dallas a few times. And he called me up and said, hey, are you an REO agent? I'm like, yeah. And he'd found my information because I'd signed up for another company, First Preston, which they were associated with. I had signed up for Home Telos for HUD too, but they didn't find me there. They found me somewhere else. He's like, I've got a HUD listing in Sterling. Can you do that? And Sterling was 90 miles away from me. And I thought, that's a long ways. But I'm like, yep, I'll do it. He's like, great. And he's like, I need to get you signed up in our system right away. Send me all this information. I'll get you the property. You need to drive out there today and go see it. I'm like, done. So I got all my information submitted, drove out to Sterling, did my inspection, came back, submitted it. That was my first HUD home with Home Telos. After a few days, they sent me 15 properties in the next week, all over, like with, you know, a 60 miles away from me to 1 mile away from me. I was working 12 hours a day, every day, doing BPOs, doing reports, getting everything done. It was crazy and fun and exciting at the same time. Then I got in with the other asset management company. I never got in with the third one. And they started sending me properties too. So this time I was doing really well and swamped. And I had to hire someone else. So around this time I hired Nikki, who still works with me, to help with HUDs. She worked with my sister a little bit doing property management, but needed more work. So she worked part-time, had her submit invoices, do all kinds of busy work for me. As we got busier and busier, she started doing BPOs, just helping with everything. So the next few years were a whirlwind, and we were selling 200 houses a year, mostly HUD homes, foreclosures, all over the area. Nikki was an amazing help and just fantastic to get all of this done. I was still working with my dad at the time. We still had a team. He was kind of doing his own thing as an agent. I was doing my own thing with my stuff. Now, over the years, we got our systems implemented, had more help from Nikki, hired another assistant, John. He did contracts, all kinds of other stuff, and I was freeing up my time, which I really learned, hey, I can't do all this work myself. I remember on my honeymoon in 2008, we went to St. Martin, and I worked half the time. My wife wasn't real happy with that because I was sitting there doing BPOs, submitting reports, doing all this stuff. And I'm like, man, I can't do this forever. So once I got that team hired, then I could go on vacation and not do all that work. I'd still check email and make sure everything's going okay, but I wasn't doing the actual work. I could actually relax and have fun. So once things were dialed in, then we started flipping more houses. Yes. So I had kind of let the flips go a little bit, not done that much work because I was so busy with REOs. But now I had more time. There were a lot of foreclosures. But the catch-22 with this was, since I was an REO and HUD listing broker, I couldn't buy any REOs that I listed. I couldn't buy any HUD homes, no matter who had them listed. There were some banks I worked with, I couldn't buy any of their properties either. So a lot of people think being a HUD REO broker helps you get more deals. And it's actually the opposite, because it's a definite conflict of interest for me to buy my own listing or to buy HUD homes, because I think I have an advantage, which I do. So could not buy those. We were buying other MLS deals, sometimes still buying auction houses, and we were repairing them, fixing them up, selling them. So we started doing more and more flips. I think we did like 8, then we did 13. And come the year 2010, we're chugging along, doing a lot of business. I was making good money, but I didn't have as much to show for it as I thought I should, right? I didn't think I was a crazy spender. This is back before I had all my fancy cars and stuff. I still had my, we just bought another house, but I knew I had to invest my money better. So I had some money in the stock market. I didn't do hardly anything. I had some money in the stock market before, you know, in the early 2002, which did a lot. It went down and disappeared. But I kept researching everything I could, and rental properties kept popping up as the best way to invest my money. So I knew I had to buy rentals, but they're expensive. I didn't know what a good deal was. I still wasn't really going online to research stuff. I was using books, and books really helped me a lot. You know, my sister had rentals. She had college rentals, but I did not like college rentals because they come with so much drama and so much management. My dad had a couple rentals, but they were mostly college rentals too. So I'm like, I need to find my own niche. So I decided on single family homes. And I still didn't have a whole lot of money, but what I ended up doing is my wife and I sold my first house I'd lived in for like 6 years. I think I lost money on it after putting a lot of work and sweat equity into it, but I bought it right before the crash and sold it right during the crash, so it really wasn't as bad as it could have been. And I bought a foreclosure. So I bought a foreclosure, borrowed money from my in-laws and my sister to pay cash for it from the foreclosure sale. Then we refinanced it with a bank. I paid everybody back. Got a smoking deal. I think I paid $210 for it. It was worth $280, $290, and it needed almost no work. So within a year, I either refinanced it. I refinanced it and took like $50,000 cash back out. So I had $50,000 extra that I didn't have before buying this house to live in. So everyone who says buying a house to live in is the worst thing you can do, if you do it the right way, it can actually be one of the best things you can do with little money. And if you're not buying from the foreclosure sale, you don't have to get cash, you know, and borrow money from your in-laws. You can put 3% down with conventional, 3.5% down with FHA, 0 down with VA, 0 down with USDA. There's down payment assistance programs to lower those costs. There's so many ways to buy a house. If you get a really good deal, which you can do, because HUD homes are sold to owner-occupants first, many foreclosures are sold to owner-occupants first, and owner-occupants can pay more than flippers like me because you don't have as many costs and you're living there. So anyway, had this $50,000 and decided now it's time to buy my first rental, and found a rental in 2010, bought it for $96,000, rent it for $1,050 a month. We put like $2,000 of work into it, and it was probably worth $130 to $140. Great deal. Was an estate sale on the MLS. So that was my first rental. And from that point, things kind of took off. I bought two rentals the next year, three rentals the next year, five rentals the next year, ended up buying 16 single-family rentals from 2010 to 2015. I was funding these rentals mostly for my REO business, HUD Homes, and flips. So I was putting 20% down on these. A few years after buying some of them, I did refinance some, pulled cash out, used those to buy more rentals, and was really having a great time. And of course, keeping myself busy. I've always managed to do that. Come 2013, we're still flipping more houses, still doing REO sales, still splitting a ton of the profits with my dad, who wasn't doing much. So I had different visions than him and different ideas about what properties we should buy, how things should be run. So I offered to buy him out. And I think he had wanted to retire. He just wasn't in a great position to do so. So we came up with a solution where I could buy him out, help him with retirement, take over the company, and it worked out great. Right around 2013, I started the blog and just started writing. Had no idea what I was doing. I just wrote a bunch of articles that were horrible. Horrible spelling errors, horrible grammatical errors, but people liked them. So that helped me take off with the blog. Just wrote. I'd write three articles a week just on everything I knew. It was just kind of a brain dump. And Google started seeing me. I started getting search engine hits. It was really interesting. So along the time, we're still doing flips, still doing REO sales, buying rentals, doing the blog, and I have a great team to help me. Nikki's still with me, and John's still with me. Had a couple other agents we hired to help sell houses and do different things. I still did not like working with buyers or traditional sellers. Progressing through the years, I took a lot of those articles, wrote my first books. Those were kind of horrible as well. Over the years, we edited them, changed them, made them better. Started YouTube, started doing social media, all that stuff. Started some coaching programs, as you know, the Complete Blueprint. I started like in 2015, I think, where we do monthly conference calls, direct email coaching with me, and a ton of information on rentals, our flip programs included. So if you're interested in that, let me know. You get discount codes. That's a great program. People love it. And so just kept chugging along, writing books, doing flips, doing rentals. And then around this whole 2015 time period, REOs slowed way down in Colorado, like almost nothing. So luckily, I was in a position where I could switch gears and not rely on REOs for income, because really, I haven't sold an REO in 3 years now. And they kind of just disappeared at one time. No HUD homes, no foreclosures, just because the market in Colorado was doing so well. If people got behind or got in trouble, they could just sell their house. They didn't have to let it go to foreclosure. So then we really ramped up the flipping business since we weren't doing REOs, and went from flipping, you know, 13 houses to 18, did 26 in 2017, 26 in 2018. I think we did 23 in 2019. So that's been our main focus of income at that point. I own a real estate brokerage. I started that in 2018, along with the big 68,000 square foot building I bought. So that comes along because in 2015, I stopped buying rental properties because prices got so high, rents weren't keeping up with prices, and I had no choice but to either buy really bad rentals, buy another market, or find a different niche. And I actually went to Florida, looked at rentals there, found some good stuff, but it's tough to buy out of state. And I really didn't want to buy out of state, never pulled the trigger. And then I found commercial real estate here in Colorado. So I've bought 10 commercial properties in the last 3 years or so, starting in 2017, including the 68,000 square foot building I bought with a partner. That's where I started my own office. So I have Blue Steel Real Estate now. Nikki's still with me. Along the way, I hired my good friend Justin, who I went to college with. That was back in 2013. He's still with me, helping a ton. He's a licensed agent as well. Hired my nephew last year, who's helping out a tremendous amount. He graduated from the School of Mines with a 3.99 GPA in 3 years, which is crazy. He doesn't want to be an agent, but he's helping out with a ton of other stuff. And we've got some other agents with us as well, and a ton of contractors and people helping us out. So that's kind of a synopsis of my story, which took way longer than I thought it would, but gives you an idea of how I started out, how I got to where I am now. And really, the key to my growth was hiring people to help me. You know, when the REOs, you know, you hire really good people and you kind of find a role for them, even if they don't might, you know, they might not have the skill set you need. Just like with Nikki, you know, she helped with BPOs, reports, expenses, doing all kinds of busy work in the beginning. Well, then the REOs disappeared and she didn't have as much to do. Back at that time when I was flipping a lot of houses, I hired one of my contractors to be my project manager and help. That was horrible. He crashed and burned. We got in a big screaming fight. It was not good. And so I thought, hey, I'll try Nikki and John, see how they do. Nikki did fantastic. She kind of won the job, became the project manager, and is still doing it now. And not only is she helping with project management on flips, she helps with property management on some of my rentals. She helps with the brokerage. She helps with overall vision of the business. Just fantastic. And Justin has been great too, with helping out with the blog, the overall vision of the business, our real estate team, all kinds of great stuff. Alex, I had no idea, he's my nephew, what he would do when he started, but I knew he was fantastic at numbers. I knew he's really smart, hard worker, and he's helped a ton as well with the blog, with, you know, dissecting the numbers on the flips, the brokerage, figuring out all that stuff. So really the key has been hiring really good people. Not exactly people who are experienced or awesome in your line of work, but good people and teaching them what to do. A lot of times you get people who have experience in your line of work and they have the wrong experience, or they learn the wrong things and you got to teach them over again. It's harder than teaching someone who doesn't know anything. So that's been a huge key. Hiring out people to help on the flips, creating systems for getting the work done, for finding deals. That's all been a huge part of it. Buying really good rentals that are way below market value with cash flow. You know, we've never bought rentals hoping they go up in value. They've always made money from the start. Adding value on commercial properties by increasing leases has been a huge part of it. And having control. I'm a control freak, so I haven't ever had a lot of partners. Haven't ever liked working for other people. So having that control and good people to help me has been a huge key to my business and getting to where I am. And one last thing. I know I wanted to talk about some other things, but we've kind of meshed them into my story as well. So we'll talk about more in-depth things on commercials, rentals, flips, brokerage, all that stuff in later podcasts. But setting goals, you know, I said I set that accidental goal with my letter, has been huge. So along the way, I've taken coaching programs like Jack Canfield Coaching, read a ton of self-help books, listened to a ton of self-help, you know, audiobooks. I'm always setting goals. You know, I try to meditate, although it's hard to do. I really need to get back into that. Just writing out my plans has been a huge part of my success. And setting big goals so I can visualize was huge as well. So a lot of you know I'm a car nut. I bought a Lamborghini Diablo in 2014. I set a goal to buy it in 2013. And that was a huge factor in my success, just that motivation, setting kind of standards for what I have to do before I could buy that car has been fantastic. Bought a few more cars since then as well. And really, it's been a fun time. I love real estate. I love my work. Going to work on Mondays is fun for me. It's not like I dread going to work. And that's been a huge part of my success as well. So if you can find something you love to do, it can really make your life a lot of fun and make you more successful too, because you're willing to put in those hours, you have the right attitude, and you're not dragging yourself around all day long. All right. So I think that's all I've got for this podcast. We're hitting 40 minutes here. We'll have a lot more podcasts to come here in the next year. A lot of cool stuff we can talk about. If you have suggestions or questions, we might be able to work those into the podcast as well if they're pretty in-depth questions. So thank you all who signed up and joined up for the insider training. Just a quick note, I didn't mention it before. We have the special introductory price for people in the first month. That will be going up after that, but you're locked in forever at your introductory price if you stay with us. If you do opt out and come back, then you have to come in at the higher prices. So our incentive to keep you with us, and hopefully we're providing enough value that it makes sense to stay with us as well. All right. Thank you all for your time. We'll be back with another podcast next month. We'll be doing the AMAs and send that information out here soon as well. And here's to your success.